I didn't have a lot of weekends growing up. I gave up a lot. I didn't go to like a lot of the school dances or the school activities. I didn't have as much balance probably than I should have, but because I was practicing and putting in the repetition and playing. And yeah, it just looked like a big commitment, you know, and it was hard at times, but it paid off. Like it was worth it because that repetition over and over, like, and that high level competitiveness made me a better player.
Hey, I'm Ashley Agle. Some of you might know me as Ashley Burkhart, and I'm a former D1 and professional softball player who spent a few years coaching in the college game before deciding to put all of my focus into youth softball players and helping them make their dreams and their goals happen for them. It's our job to help them unleash their potential and become the athletes they've always dreamt of. I come from a small city in the Midwest and didn't let that stop me from making my goal of playing D1 softball a reality. No matter where you live, you have the tools to help you thrive, and I am hoping through this podcast to help you get there. On this podcast, you'll learn from Olympians, Hall of Fame coaches, and elite players what their journeys have been like, and you'll also learn from me and my family a bit of our journey through the game. I'm so excited to have you here, so whip out your notebook and let's learn how we can grow in this game together. Welcome to When the Cleats Come Off. Back when I was in high school, I used to go to Notre Dame softball camps every single year. And it was the premier softball university within 2 hours of my home. And my dad was always set on making sure I was coached by the best. Lizzie Restano was the hitting coach on staff at the time. And she really knew how to throw an epic clinic. She loved practice, and every clinic I attended, you could tell this was her passion. From teaching us some signature drills the Irish did, throwing us in front of tough machines and live pitching, getting what felt like millions of reps, and even getting us a dog toy to learn on how to have better path. Yeah, I'll talk about that later. I always left their clinics feeling refreshed and eager to take the work that I just did into my own practice with my dad at home. Needless to say, Lizzie was a huge reason why I started loving the art of the swing and knowing what it takes to become as great as I possibly could at it. Fast forward to 2019, an opportunity arrived where I got to coach with Lizzie at Notre Dame as their volunteer assistant. I felt like a fly on the wall oftentimes at practice and really got to learn the philosophy behind Lizzie's experience with the foundations of the swing, with plate approach, game IQ, timing, visualization, and more. It was a year I'll never forget, and I'm so excited for you to learn a bit of her incredible knowledge today on the podcast. After spending 17 years as an assistant and eventual associate head coach at the University of Notre Dame, where she and the rest of her softball staff received 3 Staff of the Year honors, she now works for WeCoach as the Associate Director of Member Outreach and Engagement. Their mission is to support women in coaching of all sports at all levels. They work to recruit, advance, and retain women in coaching through professional growth and leadership development programming. Being a coach is a profession that requires no formalized education or certification, and Lizzie is passionate about providing these opportunities so we can grow and continue to represent a strong female presence amongst our growing ranks of badass female athletes. That came straight from Lizzie. In the show notes of this episode, you can find out more about WeCoach and the incredible work they're doing to build incredible female leaders in our sport. In this interview, we discuss how a group of neighbor boys in Irvine, California, launched Lizzie to become a competitive gamer early on in her life, why she believed playing soccer helped her become an overall better athlete, why she has a deep love for practice, and a bit of behind the scenes of what the Irish used to do each week in the cages. What the workload looked like in her collegiate athletes' fall, winter, spring, and off-season practices, and what coaches should be implementing in every hitting practice. And we spent a large chunk of the interview talking hitting, from teaching fundamentals and foundations, how you can get hitters to own their swing a bit more, how to work on timing and tempo, the power of visualization, and the importance of letting hitters have their own style. We talk about how she worked and continued to grow her knowledge as a hitting coach. And you already know we talk about a few signature drills that you're going to want to start adding to your own hitting workouts. Like I said, Lizzie has a superpower IQ of hitting and is an incredible mentor to me, and I'm so dang excited for you to get to meet her this week. Now, this is a bit of a longer interview, so feel free to tap in during your walk, while doing dishes, or driving to and from the ball field. Pause wherever you need to and make sure to stay till the end, because that's where some of the gems of this interview are. All right, let's welcome Lizzie to the show. Let's go. Lizzie, welcome to When the Cleats Come Off. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you. You've been asking me for years now, since our coaching days, and I'm finally here. I'm delivering.
You are delivering and more. Like you said, Bluey's on in the other room. We don't know how long we have, but I have a jam-packed conversation planned. We're going to talk hitting. We're going to talk just, do you know, game IQ? I feel like you're one of those people that I learned a lot about game IQ from, and I know we only coached together for, can't even call it a year because that was the COVID year, but, you know, for a short time, but you know the game so well because you were in it for so long, yeah. And I just feel like you're the perfect guest to kind of talk about these things. But before we dive into it too much, where did your involvement of the game start? Because a lot of people, coaches, you know, they all have this cool story, and I want to just know, like, what was little Lizzie like? Like, what made her love softball?
Yeah, I grew up in Southern California. So the first 5 years of my life, my family moved around a little bit. I was born in Toledo, Boston the first 5 years of my life, then Salt Lake for a year. And then our family made move to California when I was in first grade. So I really think like just being in California had a huge influence because softball was a big game out there. You know, it was had such a strong presence. But I 100% attribute like my success in softball to the street that I grew up on. I grew up on a street, a cul-de-sac, and it was a street of all boys. And we the sun would rise, we'd go out in the street and we would just play sports all day. Like, and our parents didn't know where we were. We could be miles away from the house. Like, nobody knew. We'd be out in the street playing football and soccer and tackle, you know, whenever it rained, it would be mud football. We played baseball. And with baseball, we had a bat, a tennis ball. We would put like dishcloths down as the bases. And I realized it later when I was coaching that I think I learned to hit in my driveway because we would play in my driveway. And then the house straight across the street, Mr. and Mrs. Nelson's house, that was like our like meter of, if you hit their garage, it was a single. If you hit the bottom part of their roof, it was a double. If you hit the top part of their roof, it was a triple. And obviously if you hit it over their home, it was a home run. But it just forced like straight hitting, you know, staying up the middle. Yeah. Like we couldn't pull it. We couldn't like slice it. You had to hit it straight up the middle at the house. So I really like, thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Nelson, for letting us hitting tennis balls at your house. That's where it kind of started. So
that's so fun. Yeah. Honestly, this is why I love you, because literally that exact same story I can tell you happened in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like it was me. And then there were some girls on our street, but they weren't athletic. They didn't want to play. And it was me and all these boys. And I think from like a competitive standpoint, boys are just ruthless, you know, in a way to where I gained so much like just mental toughness from trying to compete against these boys because they don't want to let a girl beat them.
They don't. And they're crazy. I can tell you this. I hosted my 8-year-old daughter's birthday party 2 weeks ago. And my God, the boys were like, they wanted to tackle and fight and play and rough. And like, that's how I had to keep up with them growing up. That's what you had to do. You wanted to keep up. And I constantly felt like I had to show them like, well, I can hit it over the fence or I can hit it over the house or, you know, I can score a touchdown or a goal or whatever it was. So we would always, I had to keep up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are you, now that Janie's 8, is it kind of like a goal of yours to keep her on like competitive, you know, teams like that? Or do you just want her to just enjoy it?
I'm so like, I truly believe like, I'm not going to make her a softball player. If she wants to play softball, that's it. I'm like just letting her try all kinds of things. So like she's playing softball right now. Yes. She played soccer all fall. I'm hopefully Saturday, I'm going to try and take her to like a free tennis clinic in town. She did ice skating. All like, I literally want her to try everything and see what clicks because Like, I knew for me, like, sports clicked right away. Like, that was it. I loved it. And I think, like, I truly believe that if you want to be successful in anything, like, you're going to find most success in what you're passionate at. And that's going to fuel you to keep going. So if I see that, like, fuel and that passion in her in, like, sport, then, yeah, I'll push her and drive her a little more. But I'm just kind of, like, waiting to see it, you know? I'm setting it up where she can play and we'll see what she comes to love and like. But I'm certainly not pushing it. You're not just me as one of these crazy parents that's on a scholarship mode with her at 8 years old.
No, I'm so glad you said that.
Yes. It's not worth it because you don't even know, you know? It's funny. One time I was working and we were running a panel of Olympian athletes. This was for a previous job I had, and we had an Olympic volleyball player on, and one of the parents asked, you know, I have a 12-year-old daughter. I want to know, like, what were you doing at 12 years old? Like, that made you such a successful volleyball player. And she said, at 12 years old, I was playing kick the can in the street with the boys. Like, I was just out, you know, like I was roaming the neighborhood, kind of like we just talked about. And I loved that. I thought that was such a great answer, because if it's in you, it'll come about. Like, it's not going to come about if you push it at 8, 9, 10 years old. And this year round stuff, like, I do think you need to have balance. Like, you got to let them be kids. So I really, you know, I just want her to be a kid and have fun.
Yeah, I love that. And then her competitive fire will come out.
Exactly.
So when you were getting older, were you playing multiple sports, or did you focus on softball at a certain age? What sports were you playing?
I played soccer and softball and swimming all the way I swam through eighth grade. And then in high school, it was just soccer and softball all the way till the day I got to Notre Dame for college. So soccer I loved because I got my energy out. I could run around. I could crash into people. I could, you know, it was a little more aggressive. Whereas the softball, you know, I still loved that, but it just had a different vibe. So it was really important for me to do that. But I was on a really competitive travel ball team. And I remember, you know, our coach wanting like commitment. He didn't want us to miss for other sports. And like, God bless my dad. He would like sneak me off to go play. Like, we would play an 8 a.m. softball game and, you know, Orange. And then we'd go slip off to Irvine and I'd play a noon soccer game and then back for the 3 p.m. softball game. And like, my coach had no clue. But my dad, like, you know, he'd be like, come on, you're doing it. Let's go. So Dang. That was really important. So that, yeah, again, like playing multiple sports, it was really good for me to have that balance. And like, softball was just so competitive and so serious in Southern California at that point that I was like, I felt the heaviness of it. So it was really important to me to have soccer as well.
Yeah. Now, from like a footwork standpoint, you probably had this just element in softball that was just so good with your footwork and all that stuff because of soccer. Like, do you attest some of those skills in softball to your soccer skills?
I think that like having just playing a different sport and like using different muscles and like doing different things, like, I don't know that it translated, but it gave me athleticism as a whole.
Yep.
So I wasn't, you know, like funneled into one area. Like I was able to move left and right. Like, I wasn't super fast at all. But I like trained myself by the time I was in college to get like quick on the base paths. I was never a base stealer, but I learned to steal bases. By the time I was in college, but I think that was, just due to athleticism, you know. I don't know exactly if footwork, you know, like translated over exactly, but.
Yeah. I preach the athleticism part. And like you said, I think when you play multiple sports, you're using different muscles, you're being tested in different areas. You have different types of coaching, game style, like.
Yeah.
How important is that for athletes to think about, especially early on, like, to be just an athlete? Like, my dad raised me the same way. I was playing everything. And at the end of the day, I was a better softball player, I think, because of all these different sports I was playing.
Yeah. I mean, and even think of, take the skill out of it, like just put yourself in the competitive situations. And I can think of like, oh my gosh, being in the championship soccer game and it was a tie game and you were competing and then it went to shootout and like the pressure of that, you know, like having to walk up and make the PK and the pressure all being on you. And that provided a different kind of pressure that was the same, but it just wasn't always the same thing over and over. It wasn't always being in the box in the pressure situation. It was a completely different environment and you just learned to kind of thrive. So I think same pressure, different environments kind of makes you a little bit more whole. As a competitor.
Were you the player that loved winning or hated losing more?
I loved winning. I did. I loved like achieving and winning. That was it. Like the thing, like I knew I loved it, but I loved like achieving. That was my thing. And I think that's probably why I landed at a place like Notre Dame, because it's like the achievement piece of it.
On both ends, academically and athletically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Where did that come from? That achievement, just wanting it so bad?
I don't know. It was always wired in me. I just remember like loving sport. Okay. Like yeah. I love watching sports. I love playing sports. I love playing on the street, like all that. That was just in me. I was just born with it. And then like the Notre Dame piece came because it ran in the family. My great uncle played football for Newt Rockne. He and his family retired in Santa Barbara. So in California, we would go up to these family reunions, in Santa Barbara, and they'd play the fight song. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but I love it. Like, I love it. You know, I want to be a part of it. And then when I was in eighth grade, Rudy came out, and that was life-changing. My mom took me to the premiere of Rudy, and that's it. Mind-blown, decision done. Like, I had to find a way to get to Notre Dame. So
that's amazing. Okay, let's dive into that process. And I know this feels probably like a million years ago, because now you have this whole new life and things are crazy with kids. But like, when you knew you wanted to go there.
Yes.
Like, and I know you were competitive, but like, what did it take truly, you know, to be able to play at your dream school?
Yeah.
You know, cause a lot of people don't get to, I mean, you know my story, like my goal was Notre Dame. It wasn't as deep as your goal is Notre Dame, but like, because of that pursuit, I ended up finding the perfect school for me.
Yeah.
So like, how did you find that? And like, what does that take?
Well, I mean, like I got lucky too, like, because it's like this mastery, it's like this equation, like you love them and you want them, but they have to love you and want you too. And like, sometimes I can even say this from like when I was coaching at Notre Dame, like sometimes there'd be a kid we love and really wanted, but we had like three people deep in that position. And that would have been the case with you, you know? So it was like,
totally.
We love you and want you, but like, you got to go where, you know, you can go and, you know, thrive. So I think, when I was in high school, remember, you know, I talked about playing both soccer and softball, but I remember it coming to the point where like, okay, you got to pick one, like you got to get on a really competitive of one team. And then the other one can kind of take the back seat. And so like the opportunity was there in softball, and that's kind of like where my parents drove me. Like, I think my love maybe was in soccer a little more, but my parents saw it and they're like, the opportunity's in softball. You're getting on a good softball team. So, I got on a really good competitive softball team. I was on the SoCal A's, and like at that point, softball hadn't grown like it was today. So it was like us, the Batbusters, Gordon's Panthers, the Firecrackers, and like maybe insert one more team. And these tournaments we'd play every weekend, it would always be us four, like in the lot. And one of us would win the same tournament every weekend. So, you know, just being on a really competitive program team that like, it took a lot of practice. I mean, I didn't have a lot of weekends growing up. I gave up a lot. I didn't go to like a lot of the school dances or the school activities. I didn't have as much balance probably than I should have, but because I was practicing and putting in the repetition and playing, and it just looked like a big commitment, you know, and it was hard at times, but it paid off. Like, it was worth it, because that repetition over and over, like, and that high level competitiveness made me a better player.
Mm-hmm. And you love practice. Like, love practice. I feel like if you're a college coach, you have to love practice, because you know how, you know, if you do it right, you're going to see the results. So take me through, why is practice so important? Why should we spend more time practicing? Because right now there's travel teams that are playing all year long, not emphasizing practice, and wondering why they're not getting better.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's our fundamentals, and like, that's what our practice is. Like, when I was probably from eighth grade on, like, it was, cause I stayed in the same program, like pretty much all through my high school experience, and our practices never really changed. And like they would be the same thing. So we'd always start and we'd stretch and get loose and whatever, but then we'd go into like an hour of just fundamentals, like our coach just rolling balls at us. Like, and the whole team would be in the line, like fielding ground balls, regardless if you played infield or outfield, fielding backhands, taking drop steps, like over and over and over again. And like hitting would be in a cage, like I would, you know, just be hitting over and over and over again, like the same, just repping it out. And I think just building that foundation of fundamentals, and then like, you know, same thing with base running. Like we would do drills like that over and over. We'd have 6-hour practices. And it was crazy. And like the parents would all rally behind it. Like they'd make bring coolers and we'd break for lunch and we'd have like, we spent all this time together. Like these kids that I grew up with, like we all today, if, you know, I see them, we all have this like bond. If I like saw someone that like I hadn't seen in years, like, because we spent so much time on that field together, just practicing it out, repping it out, getting dirty and diving and getting yelled at and, you know, competing and winning. Like we just have this bond that goes back deep. And I think that practice is something that you just can't get from games, like the fundamental foundation of like good footwork, learning how to field a ball, learning how to throw a ball, what a drop step looks like, you know, hitting a pitch over and over and over again. So
mm-hmm. To the point where it's boring, right? Yeah. Like it's, you know, but you're developing those, like you said, fundamentals, but also just muscle memory. Like,
yeah.
I remember when I was super, I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but I was like super sick and we were playing a game and I had a fever of, I think, 101. I was at a field and it was like 95 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't thinking about my mechanics. I was just seeing it and hitting it. And I actually played like lights out because I think just my body was just like, okay, just do what you taught it to do, you know, like trust it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll talk about this a little later when we talk about hitting, but like, our minds are what's stopping us from being great, I think, in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah. And like the term is you give power to your thoughts, and that mm-hmm. works in really good and bad ways. Because like, you know, like in that situation, like where you're sick, because your mind, your thought is like, oh my God, I feel sick. I feel sick. I feel sick. So you're not thinking about hit the ball, do this, like get your foot down, get back, blah, blah, blah. You just let it happen naturally, you know? Mm-hmm. Same thing, like if you're a player and you have an injury and you're battling it, if it's like, oh my God, my finger's like cracked open, if you're thinking about that finger over and over and over again, that's gonna get in your way a little. But if you focus your thoughts somewhere else, like it will, you know. So mm-hmm. like you really have to like think about like, okay, what are my thoughts and like what am I giving power to? And how does that help me or hinder me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But back to just the practice and the reps, it's like we have to be able to know what to do, like from a body awareness standpoint, like that's what practice is. It's to trust yourself. It's to fail, but also learn like, okay, how can I do that better? Like, and you don't really see that. So when it comes to hitting, let's just dive into hitting. Let's go.
Okay. Let's go.
look, it's just pulling her hair back. Let's go. you know, you ran a very similar hitting practice every day. I was, you know, standing on the side, just watching and admiring how you run it. And it's like, the girls kind of knew what to expect every day. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, you start with your T drill and, you know, you go through this circuit and there's different elements that you add. Like the drills change every once in a while, but like, you're not a big drill person. Like you're not here's a list of 35, 50 drills.
Yeah.
You only really talk about 2 or 3. Like, give me your reasoning behind that. Because I think, you know, I get stuck sometimes saying, oh my gosh, like, what's this new drill that's going to help this hitter do this?
Yeah.
But like, you take a different approach and I just want you to talk about it because I love it.
Yeah. Like I was never really gimmicky. So like, you didn't see me I early on. Sure. Was like when I was first learning hitting and figuring it out, like I tried all kinds of gimmicks, right? There's a few that like, I do believe in, I stick with, like in terms of like, if it's a hitting product that I like or whatever, but I kind of just was like, well, you got to figure out how to do it like the real way, you know, like without what it's going to look and feel like in real life. So I think that it was just also not wanting to ever throw surprises at them where it was like, it threw them off, you know, like I wanted them to know what was coming and learn how to do it and be able to do that over and over and over again. So that could just happen naturally when, you know, the game came.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
thinking about the rise ball machine right now.
Yeah. The rise ball machine. Good one. That's
that you threw at them in the fall and they couldn't touch it like for months.
Yeah, they did it.
Yeah.
And then by the spring, they started touching, but because we did it over and over and over again. Like, you can't just do it once and then revisit it a month later. Like, and that was one thing that we did was, I love that. We did machine Fridays. So, like, a lot of those Fridays, it was just like, we just did all kinds of machines and threw stuff at them. And then they loved it, you know, throwing some good music. And we threw all kinds of crazy pitches at them with all different kinds of, you know, rise ball machines and curve ball machines and drop ball machines and the small ball machine. And then, yeah, that just like, the more they did it, the better they got at it. So I think like no surprises in hitting is a good approach because like, well, yeah, you're going to be surprised. Like, right. Like when someone throws like a nasty change or, you know, backdoor curve at you or whatever it is, but you got to learn how to hit it first. So like, and a great example of that would be changeups. Like, you know, early on it would be like, we'd always do drills where we'd try and surprise them with a change. And then like, one day it hit me. I was like, why don't we let them know it's coming every time and let them learn how to hit it? Okay. So like now we're going to do a drill where I'm going to throw 30 changeups at you and you know that changeup's coming. So now you're working on your body and your form and how you like carry your weight and hold back and whatever it is. And you learn how to hit that off speed pitch so that like when it does come at you, then you, you know, your body knows how to react. But when we just would try and surprise them with it, like it was always then the body didn't know how to react. You would just go into like, you know, panic mode and throw the bat out there and whatever.
So, right. So if you're a hitting coach and you have a team or whatever that are struggling with changeups, you advise first things first, throw them changeups all the time, let them know it's coming and have them figure out how to hit it.
Yeah, exactly. Like tell them, hey, we're going to do a drill. Like I was saying, we would even be doing like reps, sets of five. I'd be like, okay, the first five are going to be all off speed. And I'd throw them five off speed. They knew exactly. And they would plan on how to hit it. Okay. The next five are going to be all fast. Then we throw five fast for awesome. And then the next five, we're going to mix them. So then they had to put it together, but like, just don't surprise them with it. Let them know it's coming and let them learn how to react to it.
Yeah. And I think over time, I'm thinking of myself as a hitter here. You're going to also notice, you know, as they're throwing the pitch, you know, what does the release look like? You know, it's like you're learning more than just the fact that a changeup's coming. No, you're seeing like, what is the pitcher doing to throw that changeup? How can you recognize it early?
Yeah.
And I think just over time, you kind of just learn that.
Yeah.
And I love that you're advising to just, hey, let's just hit a bunch of them. React.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good. That's good stuff. Now, if you're a player. So another thing that I admired about you is that you weren't like always chirping at your hitters while they're in the cages. You really didn't say much at all. And I think a lot of hitting coaches, even myself, sometimes like we always, you know, want to fix it within a rep, you know, but you kind of just let them learn, let them figure it out. And a lot of times the hitters were approaching you with Lizzie, I can't get this. How can I get this? But that patience that you had, did you always have that? Or what did you learn to know that that's an important element as a hitting coach?
Well, like I learned when I learned about how I process information, like me as a person, I'm a slow processor. Okay. So like,
same.
You're going to tell me something or ask me a question. If you ask me a question, like a hitter comes in and says, oh, what's going on with my swing? I might not have an answer for you right away. I need to like think about it. I need to look at you. I need to probably get my phone out and film you. Let's take a look, you know, let's break it down. And then I'm going to process it. And then I'm gonna have a really great answer for you. Some people are not like that. Some people are really fast and they can just tell you right away, or they'll always have an answer for you right away. But when I learned about myself that like, yeah, like I kind of process a lot slower. So I stopped like giving them false information, like giving them that quick answer that I thought I had to give them. I was like, you know, so they came to me and said, all right, what's going on? I'm feeling this or whatever. I said, okay, well, let's take a look. Let's hit some, let's film it. Let's break it down. I believe in just them watching themselves so much makes a huge impact. So in the power in the iPhone, like, you know, slow-mo video mode can just tell you so much about it. So I think that when I learned like that, how I process information, then it just gave me like the freedom and the space to kind of like let go, let them go, and like really just give them autonomy over their swings and let them in there figuring it out. And if I like micromanage their swing, that man, there's a lot of hitters I know I screwed up over the years because I micromanaged them. Like I was like, do this and tweak this and do that. And it was like, just let it go. Right. Just let them go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it takes time to learn that. And I love that you were vulnerable in sharing that. Hey, quick sidebar from this episode. Have you heard about VHA yet? The Virtual Hitting Academy? Softball has taught me not only how to push through adversity and failure, but also how to be a better teammate and a confident woman who learned how to love pressure and thrive in it. That only came with countless hours of hard work with my dad, team, and an outstanding hitting coach, and a devotion to push for something greater than myself. Insert VHA. I thought of teenage me, who rode with my dad and eventually drove myself to hitting lessons 2 hours away. There and back would be 4 hours. And this coach got the best out of me. She was the best in the area. And not everybody has the luxury to have a great hitting coach down the street. This is why I created VHA. If you're looking to improve your confidence, to improve your swing, and to be around a community of athletes who are eager to become a better version of themselves in the box and beyond, I have something cool for you. Yes, in the past, VHA has only been a 6-month membership, but I've just opened up doors for monthly memberships, and you can cancel anytime. If you want to become a member this month, you can actually visit us in our live weekly coachings. Every month, we do an hour-long coachings. We have Ask Ashley sessions where you can ask me anything that you want. You can book calls with me, parents or athletes alike, to talk about hitting, to talk about mental game, and it's at your fingertips right now. If you head to www.ashleybtraining.com and click on the VHA tab, you can sign up for our monthly membership option, which is called the Silver membership. We would love to add you to our community of VHA, and I hope you at least go check out the link. It's also in the show notes, but it's also www.ashleybtraining.com and click on the tab VHA. I'm so excited to see who joins us. All right, let's head back to the episode. Now, do you think that do you let hitters kind of feel it out too? Like, are there times where you're just like, what do you feel? You know, like what questions are you asking these hitters if they just feel lost?
Yeah. If they're not feeling great, it's like sometimes it's like, okay, well, tell me what you're feeling. What do you, you know, what's going on? Tell me what you're feeling. And if they can't really connect with that, it's like, okay, well, is it a timing issue? Okay. So let's talk about your timing. Like, do you think that maybe it's not, you know, because I think a lot of times what we do is we just go start changing physical stuff. Like, all right, let's change your hands and move your foot and change your stride and let's change everything up. But it really might just be a timing issue. And the one thing that really goes along with timing a lot is tempo. So like I really put timing and tempo a lot together where, you know, like let's slow it down. Let's make it really smooth, really controlled. Because if you look like hitters that are like moving too fast, their tempo is moving too fast, like they're loading fast or stepping fast, whatever. But like, say you slow all that down, well, then you have to adjust your timing too. So if we're going to like slow our movements down and try and be a little slower and smoother, I might have to start like all my movements a little bit earlier to get ready. And ultimately, like we always worked to get like to that, like ready position, whatever that is, like the toe touch, ready, stretch, like whatever that, whatever you want to call it, like with optimal efficiency. So like timing and tempo, a lot of times timing and tempo went into that a lot more than mechanics, because it was like just about getting there. And if you can get there at the right time with the right tempo, then it would allow your, you know, your bat to find the zone and find the ball.
Yeah. So right now prime example, hitters are struggling with timing. And I always say it's because, you know, this past winter, how often did you see a live pitcher? Yeah. And a lot of them are like, oh, I guess not there very much because we didn't play.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, like that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it makes sense why everybody's struggling with timing.
Yeah.
What kind of advice would you give on, hey, how can you keep up with your timing? Like, is it just seeing a live pitcher more? Is it more machine work? Like, how would you go about a hitter that's struggling with timing?
Yeah, I think that if you don't have a live pitcher to see, right, then you got to find a way to visualize that. And visualization can really like play into that. So if you are using machines, like, I think that that's, you know, like not just going ball in the machine over and over, like slow it down. So even like you could kind of make a machine more realistic. So like, instead of like, you know, hitting like just 10, 15, 20 real fast, like, why don't you hit one, step out, like you're in an at bat, then step back in and make sure that you're like getting yourself set and ready every single time. But like for timing too, like this is like simple, like my rule of thumb was always like try and be, have like your foot down and your hands ready, like ready in that, again, that like kind of stretch position right when the ball's releasing. So like when that ball's coming out of the hole or when that pitcher is coming out of the pitcher's, ball's coming out of the pitcher's hands, like to be ready. And a lot of times, like if someone was struggling and we went back to the video, I could see like, okay, your stride foot's not even get down until like the ball is 3/4 of the way into the zone or out of the pitcher's hand. So like, let's shoot to be a lot earlier. So, I mean, that would be really early, right? Like just shooting to be like stride foot down and like getting into that position right about at the pitcher's release. But especially when you were struggling, you'd rather be early than be late. And that kind of helped you out a little.
Yeah. Can you, for just those listening, obviously not everybody can see you, but if you go to YouTube, you can watch it. What is that stretch position? Can you describe that position that you want to be in before you fire?
I mean, it's like not when you are in your, it's not just like when you're in your stance. It's like when you get in your stance and the pitcher's winding up and then you're winding up. And so it's like kind of when you're at your optimal, like right here, right? Like, so when I'm like, right before my bat starts to go through the zone. So that's what I call, you know, a stretch or a load or a gather. Yeah. Like we always were trying to find like, what's the right word for this, right?
Going to resonate?
I think gather might be kind of like one of the best ones, but like when you're in that optimal, I called it like ready position, like ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, even a defensive, like ready position, it's very similar. Yeah. Like you're in the center of your body, you're in an athletic place. Like if you're going to move from one direction or the other, you are ready. Like your core is involved. Like, it's hard to explain actually.
Yeah. I mean, and if you watch any great hitter, like put on a softball, baseball, whatever hitter it is, like it's going to be when they get in the box and the pitcher starts their windup and then you're starting to like get ready to pull back and hit it. A great analogy, like baseball or softball to hockey, like the ready position would be like when a hockey player is in his like slap shot, like he's pulled back, but he hasn't moved
released
that stick. She hasn't, right?
Correct.
Players out there too. When the hockey player, when they're in that pullback slap shot before they come through, that's what I would consider like ready.
It's funny you said she, because we grew up kind of watching males on TV more than females. So I always think of baseball terms or baseball hitters, like, but now we get to have softball players, you know, be able to be examples for us, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Another thing that I like the stretch, because, you know, I do this drill called like a rubber band drill where you're stretching between your hands and your front knee.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you can create a good stretch between those two.
Yeah.
And then when you decide to fire, those almost like come together and snap just like a rubber band would.
Yeah.
That I like stretch. I like that. I think I'm going to start using that with my hitters.
We put like a band on like their foot and their hands. And if you got into that ready position and your band had not tightened, then you weren't making an efficient move. So you want like that band to tighten, like to pull apart and tighten, rather than stay like loose, you know. And you do see that a lot. Some hitters, they'll all just move together, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of like stretching your body apart.
So good. Yeah. I love this so much. You know how much I love this. So some coaches are struggling with like how to put together practices depending on the season that they're in.
Yeah.
And I know like your fall practices were different than your spring practices and then your in-season practices. So can you just give like a brief oversight on, you know, what are you trying to do in the fall with your hitters in college? What were you doing in the spring? And then come season, like what was going on?
Yeah. The fall was like repetition, get back into it. Like they had just taken a summer off for the most part. And like, and that's really important in college. Just take that summer and like, just get your body back, get your health back, like reload. Then when you get back to the fall, like it's going to be heavy rep, lots of practice. We're also playing games. Like fall is probably the most intense time in terms of volume of everything, because in college softball, like fall is when you're doing everything. Like you're playing games, you're going to practice, your camps and clinics, you got like, it's all going on, right? So just really heavy volume in the fall and just like repping it out, let's get it back. And then when fall practice stops and it's into hitting, like individual, just skill instruction time, that's going to be, all right, now let's start to break it down. And let's like, okay, you've repped it out. We've got you back in a good habit of swinging. And like when we feel comfortable with that, let's kind of, is there something we can look at to like, let's make an adjustment and improve? Or like, where can we break it down and kind of like deep dive your swing a little bit more? And then, you know, and then go home, take, you know, take break, you know, keep yourself fresh and going. But then when they come back for spring season, I would say the deeper we got into spring season, like volume is really important in terms of like, you can't keep up. Now at this point, like what we've learned is like recovery is the power of recovery, right? So where you might be getting like 100, 150 swings in a fall practice, like we might be getting 50 swings in a spring practice, like when we're in game mode, because to be fresh is to be like, you're going to just get more out of that rather than, you know, going with that heavy volume. It's just not possible.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, a lot of hitters think that if they're in a slump, they need to just hit the snot out of the ball and just train and train and train and train their way out of it. But, you know, like even just to play one game in college, like I hated doubleheaders because I knew I needed like a whole day to recover.
Yes.
But it's exhausting. You are literally putting your body through so much to just play in a game now that, you know, when you go to train, your body's fatigued, you're still lifting a little bit. Like there's just all these other elements that I'm glad you're like, no, let's do some quality swings and just a few of them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think enough players do that.
I do. And I think that, you know, I think that like everybody, one really important thing I learned too was like, everybody is, when you're in season and you're all playing together at the same time, like everybody's putting in the same amount and you're getting better at the same rate, right? So like you're in practice, you know, girl from school across the way or your rival school, whatever, they're in practice too. We're all getting swings. We're all getting better at the same rate. Where improvement happens is in those off seasons and that summer. Like that's where you see the improvement happen, because when everybody's not doing it at the same time, what are you doing? Like, right. Like, what are you doing to like kind of be in that race and get ahead, right? Like to rep it out, because it's all about repetition, like just over and over and over again. Like we know that, like what the 10,000 hour rule, like when you get hit that 10,000 hour of repetition of whatever it is, your craft, like you become a master, right? So I always thought like improvement really came in the off season and in the summers. More so than during the year. Like during the year, we're all doing it. We're all keeping it going at the same rate. And I have specific players I could think of that I would come back from summer and you'd be like, wow, she worked. I could tell she was working all summer long.
Yeah. Is that something you address in your final meetings before summer? Like, hey, this is how you're going to.
Yeah, we address it all the time, you know? And it's like whether they execute it or not, like, you know it, right? But like, and you'd even see it like a little bit in summer too, like, or during season two, like Mondays would be the off day, right? Monday's your off day. Mm-hmm. But the kids that would go in and hit on Monday as well, like sometimes had a leg up because maybe they were putting it in, but like, you got to know your body too, you know? And it's really like do a little, a lot, instead of like having one day of doing one big session, like just do a little, a lot and chip away.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because everybody thinks you're only going to get better if you spend 2 hours on it a day. It's like, no, You could spend a quality 15 minutes every day.
It all takes 15 minutes, you know? And like, that's what, like, when I would be there before practice or games every day, I'd be like, hey, like, you just got to be here. Like, we can go jump in the cage 10, 15 minutes before BP or before warm-up starts. And that would create improvement. Doesn't take a lot.
It's over time. It adds so many reps.
Yeah.
Yes. So good. Can we talk a little bit of how you address certain hitters? Because you have some hitters that need all the information.
Yeah.
And I think you and I are similar. We don't want a ton. We want just what we need, you know? We just want minimum. We want to be able to just react and hit.
Yeah.
So how do you address those different types of hitters as their coach?
You got to get to know them and, like, what moves them, what motivates them. And, like, you know, for me, like, okay, so I'm a big believer in, we did a lot of, like, disc profiling, and I don't know if you're familiar with that, but, like, that's really, like, taking your behavior. Based profile, right? And, like, if you look at, like, me, my disc profile is, like, I'm a really high C and S. Like, I'm someone, like, a lot of information could really bog me down when I learned that about myself. And so, like, less was more for me. You know, someone who's, like, a high D is just being really direct with them. Someone who's, like, really, you know, a high I person, like, you want to really connect with them, like, emotionally, right? So some hitters are emotional hitters. So that really, like, helped me coach up my players a lot, because I knew when I knew how to, like, manage their behaviors, I knew how to address them with certain things. So, like, you know, for some hitters, I knew I could go to and be like, you're not doing this. You need to get it done. Let's go. Whereas some hitters, I would have to go and be like, hey, how was your day? What's going on? How's your roommate? Like, tell me about class. Okay, let's talk about hitting, you know? And a lot of times with, like, those type of people, you'd understand that, like, something else may have happened that was, like, getting in their way, and it was in their head. And then we could, like, address that, and it'd be like, okay, well, the fight with the roommate got in the way, and then she was thinking about that, and then that ruined her whole practice, and that's why she looked bad today. You know, it wasn't so much really about hitting, but just, like, understanding people. Like, these girls are human beings, like, right? Like, they all, and everybody's different, and how you were coached doesn't necessarily mean that's how they have to be coached. I deal with that with my daughter every day. Like, she's so not me, right? But I like, I'm constantly trying to find ways, okay, how do I connect with her? That's not the way that I would want to be connected with. But everyone's different. And I think that's one thing. Like, it's like one size fits all doesn't work in 2024. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. If that's one thing we've learned, like, it's now like everything's specialized. And there's a criticism on that, but there's also could be, like, a huge benefit to that as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. So are you taking Janie outside? You have a tee and balls, and she just let her hit? Or you practice with her a little bit?
We do. We practice. I just, like, throw tennis balls. Totally guilty of dropping, like, $100 at Dick's Sporting Goods the other day on hitting stuff. I bought those little total control balls, you know, like the little ones. I was like, these will be good for her. The soft ones, not the heavy ones, which I was just had to laugh at myself. I, like, took pictures and was, like, texting them to players, because I was like, I can't believe I'm turning
here
into
we are.
A person.
Here we are.
Yeah. But she's also been showing me lately, Mom, I want to go out and hit. I want to do that. So I was like, okay. And so then And I knew people get mad at me for it, because, you know, this is what he does too. So.
Of course. Yes. We haven't even talked about Chuck, but
there goes.
And now he's overseeing Navy. Like, how cool is that you get to see your other half just live out his dream and be a head coach?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's really fun. It's different than what I expected, but it's really in a great way. It's really fun. And just to see him, like, kind of evolve from, like, so many years of knowing him as, like, an assistant coach, you know, I always know him as my husband, but now I see him as a head coach. It's a different role, right? And
You're overseeing a staff.
Yeah.
And the staff is going to do it's probably a totally different dynamic. And I'm sure he asks you questions a lot of what he should do in certain situations.
Kind of. We don't really, like, break it down too much. We talk, right? We talk and we chat, but, like, I think it's more important for us to be, like, husband and wife than, like, coach to coach.
You know, he doesn't want to bring a lot of work home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That's good. And you just get to be a fan.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
It's really cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. So last question. Actually, no, I'll add that to my rapid fire, actually.
Okay.
Is there anything else about hitting or even just the IQ of hitting that you wanted to talk about that you worked on with your players? Like, because I think, you know, game IQ comes from experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, like if I were to go lace up right now, I think physically I'm not as strong as I was, but I think I still get it done just due to the fact that we're constantly learning and evolving.
Yeah.
You know, that mental approach.
Yeah.
But like from a game IQ standpoint, like, are there like certain tips or keys that, you know, you feel like younger coaches or even players need to hear?
I would like, for me, it was like really start from the start of the swing. Like, and that's really where I like focused most of my effort with our hitters was like, if we worked on like A, B, and C first, like D, E, and F would take care of themselves. So like everything I did with our hitters was all about, how do we get them to set themselves up? Going back to that, like that ready position, get to that ready position with optimal efficiency and great timing so that when they go to swing the bat, it just takes care of itself. That I found huge success in that for me, because as like a hitting coach, because like you wouldn't see me doing a lot of drills, like working on, you know, the extension or the finish or like the contact. Like I found it more important to work on the beginning stuff first, and then it would just all take care of itself. So like physically, I would really like, that's what I recommend, is like, it's a domino effect. Work on that first part, and then the rest of it like should just fall into place. If you're like doing it right with, you know, optimal efficiency. And if there's any of your listeners that want to talk hitting with me, I'm an open book. I'll share it anytime, you know?
I love it.
Yeah. I also think it's like, you know, what's like, share the information. Like it's no secret, right? Like just the coaches, so many great coaches out there taught me and I learned from them. And, you know, I remember like early on, like Coach Candrea like said, hey, what's mine is yours. And he would always like share information when I'd go hear him speak at different camps or clinics and get out there and just like learn, get on. Even as a college coach, you know, 15, 17 years in, I'd be getting on YouTube and like Googling stuff and like learning, you know, just listening to different hitting tips, whether it was on like MLB Network or just conventions or clinics, I think. And you got to find what works best for you. Mm-hmm. There's not one size fits all approach. And there's not one way to hit a ball. So.
No, yeah. There really isn't. And like, one thing I also admired about you is that like, you weren't trying to make everybody have the same swing either. Like you knew each hitter had different, they were different sizes. They were swinging different bats.
Yeah.
And like to manage all of that.
Yeah.
It takes a lot, like you said, like getting to know the person, but like from that stretch position. Yes.
Yeah.
Like that's going to look pretty similar. Contact.
Yes.
Probably going to look pretty similar, but everything before and after.
And that's like, yeah, that's style. The difference between style and mechanics, and like, let them have their style. Like you could like have your hand straight up in the air, right? But like when you get to that position, it's going to look the same, right? That's going to be mechanics. Style, you might start open, you might start closed, you might be high and tight, you might be in slow. You might be like you, be out super wide and in your legs and like, you know, really, you might just be standing straight up, like kind of really more compact, like everybody's style is different. Let a hitter have their own style and focus on the mechanics. And the mechanics are, you know, that point when you get to that ready position and just making sure everything's in line and in place. And I would also say, like, when things go wrong, like, kind of always look a step before. Like, don't look at what's going wrong. Be like, okay, well, what's happening before that? And then what's happening before that? And what's be happening before that to, like, cause you to maybe you know, like if you're popping up, like, okay, well, don't just work on the pop-up. Like what's happening before the pop-up? Like, are you, okay, you're dropping your hands. Well, why are you dropping your hands? Probably because you're opening your hips. Why are you opening your hips? Maybe because you're closed off. Like, so just keep backtracking to see where like the root of the problem is.
This is so good. Do I want this to go for another 4 hours? Yes. But I know we have lives to go get to. You said you could, answer any questions people might have. I think people are going to take you up on that. So where should we have them head to reach out to you?
They're going to reach out to maybe you, and then you can forward them my way.
That works. That works. Okay. Yes. So we can do that. I'll put my email in the show notes and people can reach out and then I'll forward them to you.
Okay. That works.
That's perfect.
I love talking, and especially because I'm not coaching right now. So like talking hitting to me and helping people would be a treat. I would love to do it.
Well, this has been a treat for me. And I know people listening, this has also been a treat. This is one of those where there were so many things hit on that I think people are going to have to listen to more than once. I think I'm going to go back and learn something new the second time I listen.
Sounds good.
But this has been a pure joy. I told you that some rapid fire questions were coming.
Yeah.
So hopefully you're okay with this.
I'm a slow processor, but I will try.
Okay. You did mention that. So yeah, I will take all the time.
Rapid fire is my personal nightmare as a slow processor.
You're not the first person that I've interviewed to tell me this. So I'll give you the list of people who have said the same thing.
Yeah.
Perfect. So a hitter that you've always admired. Can you drop a name?
I go back to like Stacey Newman was a great hitter that I would always go back to her video. And it stinks because we didn't have high def video when she played. So I would always be showing my hitter's grainy video of her. I'm going to go to
Newman. That's so good.
Yeah.
Great answer. Second one, I don't want it to be deep, but Deanna has been, you know, this role model in your life for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Mine as well. But is there any sort of lesson from her that you wish that, you know, a coach that's kind of new to the game, you know, needs to learn from that Deanna maybe has taught you?
Oh my God. She's taught me so much. She just taught me to like get gritty and compete and know the difference between hard and a challenge and, you know, just fight. I think just continue to lead. And she's taught me how to be like a really compassionate, loving mom. More than anything, I think just watching her be a parent actually has had more of an impact than the softball. I look up to that.
Yeah. I was actually going to mention this. I think working for that program for a minute, basically where I was there, family was like something that like, you know, everybody preaches like, oh yeah, we're a family. But like Deanna actually lives by that. Like from a team culture standpoint, like I've never seen a program closer.
Yes.
How does she do it? Like, other than just taking care of the people, right?
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
I think it's awesome.
That is it. You just value people more than softball. Like, and when you truly value and love your people, then you get the most out of them.
That's so good. Okay. I know you're not into drills, but you have like one or two signatures. Can you share what those one or two signature drills are?
I liked grading contact. Okay. So that would just be like a good one where like you just, you look at your contacts and you grade it like, is it a 1, a 2, or a 3? And that kind of helped us as coaches just evaluate hitters. A 3 would be like a ball you smoked. A 2 is just like an average hit. And a 1 is like a, you know, a little thinker. I liked that. This is a really like grueling drill, but just a drill we called like point game, where you would either, you'd just be hitting balls in the cage, and if it was a quality at bat, you'd get +2. If it was a non-quality at bat, you get -2. And so your number would be just going up or down, right? And sometimes with hitters, it might be like 2, 4, 6, 4, 2, 0, -2, -4. And you see them, like you could literally see hitters going into that downward spiral, and they had to find a way to work themselves out. One of the toughest drills, one of the most telling drills is that. And that's more, you know, it's not even, doesn't have anything to do with mechanics. It just has to do with like approach and
your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Facts. Okay. This leads me to my next question. A hitter's in a slump, like a massive slump, like a 3-4 game slump. It's like nothing's clicking.
Oh yeah.
What's the first thing you do with that hitter?
They got to get out of their head. So it's going to be like nothing to do with softball. You can like either take time off or you got to put music on, or you got to go out and completely change it up. And like, you got to find a way to get the focus off like the slump, like to get the slump out of your head. And so whatever it is, like completely change it up and, you know, take someone along with you, I think as well. Like when you're in it on your own, like get some friends to go out, go in the cages, put some music on, blast it, go out, whatever, and just get out of your head.
Mm-hmm. So good. Okay.
For,
last question.
And for coaches with big budgets, I always believed in new balls. Okay. So like when we were struggling, we brought out new balls because new balls fly and then it makes them feel really good. But if you don't have a big budget for that, then that doesn't work.
Or get out the 11-inch balls. Those have some pop to them.
Yeah. Baseballs. Hit some baseballs. That's a good one.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Just not off a machine, because then you'll dent your bat. But yeah.
Yes.
Last question I have for you is, I remember going to Notre Dame camps when I was growing up, and we had this stupid Chuck It.
Yes.
In a cage. And we'd hit. So Chuck It is a dog toy, for those listening and don't know.
Yeah.
It's a really great hitting tool. I use it with my hitters now, but I hated that freaking thing.
Yeah.
Where did the Chuck It evolve for you? And I know you still had hitters use it. Like, why is it important to use the Chuck It? It's this $12 tool you can get on Amazon.
Yeah, it teaches proper bat path. So like when you properly, like you hold the little Chuck It toy, you know, with the tennis ball in there, and you set a target for them and they have to hit this target, which is typically right up the middle. If they can learn to like release and get their tennis ball to release from the Chuck It and hit that center target right up the middle, then you're just creating proper bat path and like good feeling. Yeah, someone taught me that along the way. I think it was Don Slott, when I went to go visit him in his pool house and learn hitting from Red U Pro like 15, 20 years ago.
That's amazing. It's funny because I went to a lot of camps, and I remember the first year I was thrown in that cage and I struggled so hard. Yeah. I was extending my front arm and it was like flying open. And then my dad bought a Chuck It the next day, and we spent the entire year just working on that drill and getting better at it.
Yeah.
And what's so crazy is like, I attest a lot of things to that silly drill that you introduced me to, but thank goodness you did, because
it does work.
It does work. Yeah. Well, Lizzie, thank you so much for spending time with me today. This has been an absolute blast. You know, we should just have you back on and we should talk more hitting later.
We'll go
2.0 next year. Next year. Maybe. See it 2 years down the line. No, I'm just kidding. But this has been so great. Thank you so much for your time. And I know this is something that a lot of people are going to value. And I just appreciate you so much.
Awesome. I'm really happy to be a part of your community. You got a good thing going. So just keep it going. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks. Do you see why Lizzie's a huge mentor for me? I've always admired how she looks at the art of hitting, and her perspective is what I think this podcast needed. I hope you see the value in fundamentals and why we should be working on them every single day. And hopefully you're motivated to get in some reps. Remember, it's the small, consistent work that's the key to becoming great. It's not these 2-hour, 3-hour long practices. It's simple work. It's the fundamentals. And it's learning what your swing needs and putting in that work as often as possible. Learn more about Lizzie's role at WeCoach, and like she said, reach out to her about hitting anytime by heading to the link in the show notes that I provided for you. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show, or maybe even leave a review and share it with a friend, so we can together make this one of the premier sports and coaching podcasts out there. All right, friends, stay awkward, stay humble, and keep smiling, and I will see you next week.